the worst revival of an economy since the Great Depression.
We know the IRS has made clear there is no prohibition on releasing it when you're under audit. So you've got to ask yourself.
It's even a little bit, that's going to come crashing down.
It was the most watched debate in U.S. history. An estimated 84 million people tuned in on Monday night to watch Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump go head-to-head in their first of three presidential debates. And it was heated.
I said she doesn't have the stamina. You need tremendous stamina.
Well, as soon as he travels to 112 countries and negotiates a peace deal, a ceasefire, he can talk to me about stamina.
The world.
The candidates had viewers riveted to their seats for nearly 2 hours as they sparred over their policies and records on the economy, national security, and the environment. They also kept fact-checkers busy. For the first time in the U.S., sites like the National Public Radio, NPR, and the New York Times scrutinized every word the candidates said. David Eades, the supervising editor of the NPR visuals team, explains how.
We streamed the transcript of the debate in nearly real time, so it's just a couple minutes delay. And as that was happening, about 20 or so politics reporters were annotating the transcript as it came in and providing fact check. So what the end user saw was basically a near real-time feed of what was being said and then seeing annotations and fact checks on what the candidates were saying.
Donald Trump stretched the facts more often than Hillary Clinton did, according to reporters. A couple of times, Clinton literally called out for fact checkers from the stage.
Folks, the fact checkers, get
folks,
to work.
You are unpacking a
she wasn't the only one after the truth. More than 6 million users logged on to NPR's fact-check tool, sending record traffic to the website. David says fact-checking has become increasingly popular with the public.
We had expected a strong response, but we were just completely overwhelmed with how hungry the audience was for this type of content and the sort of simple and accessible presentation we had. Our real goal was that when a candidate said something, we could provide the context for that and you know, explain what was behind that, what they had said in the past. You know, was this a difference from what they had said previously? And we need to talk about the election without talking about the candidates, because it's really the issues that matter. And I think we approach this from the standpoint that all anybody wants to talk about is the candidates, because it's what they see every day, but they want to use that as a way to getting to the issue.
Okay, so fact-checking is really getting to the heart of the issues and putting what the candidates say under the spotlight and not the candidates themselves. So the scrutiny is not on them, it's on what they're bringing to the table.
That's right, yeah, okay. That's exactly it.
Journalists also use technology to hold politicians to account through data journalism. This means looking at large amounts of information using computers and has given us hard-hitting investigations like the Panama Papers and before them the offshore leaks, Swiss leaks and WikiLeaks, all projects that had a worldwide impact both with the public and with institutions. Several politicians were later forced to resign, including Sigmundur Davíð, the Prime Minister of Iceland, and José Manuel Soria, Spain's Minister of Industry. David says the kind of fact-checking they're doing also holds leaders to account.
I feel there's just a real need for evidence in reframing discourse, and I think that applies to things like crime and health reporting and the discussions around those things, because what's often said by politicians or other people in power often doesn't necessarily jive with what we know from what's been measured out in the world about what's happening. And you see that a lot, particularly around subjects like crime, where any statistic is distorted for somebody's personal agenda.
While NPR are checking the politicians, other media organizations are verifying the material sent in by eyewitnesses. John McHugh is the founder of one of these agencies, Verify Media.
More and more news reports utilize eyewitness media or, you know, footage and photographs that are taken by the people who are living and caught up in the events. And these images are incredibly useful to journalists if they can be verified. And it's a great struggle for many of us because sometimes you find some footage or some photographs and you desperately want to use them. But unless you can verify them, it's not only dangerous and irresponsible, it's potentially toxic because this can be misinformation, it can be propaganda that's produced by individuals or other state actors.
Checking all this, he says, can be labor-intensive and take hours, if not weeks.
We had somebody send some photographs to us recently from Syria. They were not taken with our app. They were not taken with the process that we prefer, and that's the fastest way to work with us. But we work with many people in many different ways. These photographs purported to show the first images of British special forces operating inside Syria. Now, I can tell you, if we could have verified those photographs, that would have been an enormous scoop for our startup. But we couldn't, so we passed on those photographs. That was incredibly painful, and they went to another organization who was able to verify them and utilize them.
The Syrian conflict poses enormous challenges to agencies like Verify Media. To get around this, they give their own app to eyewitnesses to improve the verification process.
With the marriage of cameras and connectivity in smartphones, the whole landscape has changed. We're working with people in Aleppo at the moment who are photographing and filming events and sending them out to us. Would I like to be on the ground myself? Absolutely. Do I think the journalist should be on the ground to tell a story? Absolutely. But the simple truth is, it has become more and more dangerous and almost impossible for journalists to access some parts of the world. In 2011, I traveled into South Kordofan, which is an area in the southern part of Sudan. This was just days before South Sudan, the country, was created. And I was one of very few journalists who managed to get into South Kordofan to document the war that was happening there, the bombing of civilians by the Khartoum regime. George Clooney supports an organization which relies on satellite imagery to keep the story of South Kordofan alive, because it is almost impossible for journalists to get in there.
Satellite imagery is also being used in Syria. Photographs taken from space allow journalists to find out what's happening in places like Damascus. While John welcomes this technology, he has his doubts.
It's always the case that some information is better than no information, and journalists are forced to do whatever it takes to tell the story. I think the satellite imagery that's being used to tell the story in Syria right now is incredibly important, but I don't think we'll ever replace journalists on the ground. But the simple fact is, if we can't get on the ground, then the next best thing is to gather eyewitness reports of events, to responsibly and journalistically analyze them, and when we're satisfied that they are true and correct, to use them to tell our stories.
So after hearing about the coverage on Syria, now to a smaller story that was also in the media this week, the tale of a 19-year-old teenager who spent a fortune to look like his idol David Beckham. Jack Johnson spent nearly £20,000 to look like the footballer and is planning on spending a further £30,000 despite being on benefits. I asked John what he made of this story.
I am too old to worry about being cool. I have two young daughters, and I hope I can teach them that what you look like is fairly irrelevant, and it's the actions that you take in life that are more important. The story to me, I would have to verify that. I would have to investigate it, because to me, it sounds like some sort of tabloid tale that's been embellished.
In New York, our earlier guest, David Eads, wasn't impressed either.
Would you spend $20,000 to look like, I don't know, who would you spend money to look like?
Wow, David Bowie would be a much better choice. I don't think I would spend any money to try to look like any of my idols. My idols are dead journalists and scientists, so kind of homely people as it is.
Okay. Yeah. So if you pay money to look like someone who's dead, I don't think you'll be pulling anyone. So maybe it's not a good idea to invest.
That's exactly right. Okay. Yeah.
going to see some very bad things happen because the Fed is not doing their job. The Fed is being more political than...
That brings us to the end of this week's International Media with me, Christina Rokello. A warm thank you to my guests, David Eads from NPR and John McHugh from Verify Media. And a special thank you to you for listening. Until next time, stay tuned to RFI.
Money to, who you know owes it to, and any business conflicts. Don't Americans have a right to know if there are any conflicts of interest?
I don't mind releasing. I'm under a routine audit, and it'll be released. And as soon as the audit's finished, it'll be released. But you will learn more.